All right, so here we are, 6 minutes early, live through BBS Radio Online. Thank you so much, BBS, for making this possible. I welcome those people that are listening to this program. This is a simulcast with a conference call. We have a few people on the line. Here is somebody else joining in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Samananda. I'm good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. And you?
Doing well. Thank you, man.
All right.
All right, so tonight we have an open mic.
Yeah.
And if you want to share anything, if you want to...
Last time we had an open mic, we didn't talk through the whole thing.
Yeah, and that might happen again. I noticed that too, Dharmananda.
Yeah, that's true. I couldn't hear that.
Good evening and welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Hello, Shirley from Seward, Alaska.
Good evening, Shirley. Thank you for being here. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Thank you.
All right.
Love, harmony, and grace.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hello, this is Terry from Dallas.
Hi, Terry. Welcome to the call.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. Do I hear Wanda in the distance? I guess not. All right. Is there somebody else who joined in who wants to announce himself? You're always free to do so. All right, here we go. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
John from Las Vegas.
John, good evening. How are you doing, brother?
Hi.
Thank you for being here. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, it's Sandra from Virginia Beach.
Hi, Sandra. Welcome back. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
All right.
You always have such a welcoming way.
Well, you know, it's my hobby, you know.
Well, it's appreciated for sure.
You're welcome.
Oh, my.
Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Connecticut. Hi.
Cleo, good evening. Thank you for being here. How are you?
Thank you.
All right. I believe if somebody else joined in, welcome to the call. If you want to, please say your name and location.
That's Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
All right. Thank you for being here. You have your kitty around?
She's right on my lap.
All right. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, how are you? Hi, everybody.
Good evening, Don, and welcome to the call. How are you doing?
Good. How's it going?
Good, man. Thank you for being here.
All right.
Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Hey, hi. This is Brian from Ventura.
Ventura represented. I like it. Good evening, Brian. Welcome to the call.
Oh, thanks. Hey, what is your actual name? Is it like H-I? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You're asking, yeah. Okay, let me rock the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Uncle Terry from Phoenix.
The big Uncle Terry. Thank you so much for being here, Uncle Terry.
Thank you, hi.
All right.
Hello, Uncle Terry.
Hello. How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Great.
All right. Yeah.
Terry, you said you have a new book out, right?
Pardon me?
Do you have a new book out recently? Ascension,
yeah,
or something?
I have a new book out. It's called Ascension of the New Earth and Mankind.
And, where is that available?
It's a very good book.
I'm sure it is. Where can we get a hold of it?
Go on my website.
Okay.
It's drfriedmancentralof.com.
Okay.
And Friedman is spelled F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N-N.
Okay, got it.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. We had more people joining. We welcome you. Please say your name and location.
Hello, hi. This is Sedona Jim here.
Sedona Jim, good evening. Welcome to the call.
And good evening to you.
Thank you so much, Jim. I believe we had somebody else join in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, it's Jane from Philadelphia.
Good evening, Jane. How are you doing?
Okay.
All right. Thank you for being here.
I guess you're supposed to spell your name for somebody. G-I-J-S, I think.
Yes, oh, yes. That was Brian was asking, right?
Yeah. Not geese. Don't pronounce it geese.
Like, you know, you say like hi, like H-I-C-E. For the American people.
Okay, cool.
No, I believe that Terry Brown has arrived.
Hi, Terry.
Yay.
Hi, good evening.
Hello, Terry. How are you?
Good. It is really dark over here because the time didn't change.
Yes. Yeah, you're an hour later now, huh? Yes.
That's
although
right.
You didn't change it at the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
It suddenly got dark really fast.
So what time is it there now? Are your clocks right now, or are they off an hour?
It's 7.
7, so, okay, because 9 in Cleveland.
So we're 2 hours difference instead of 3 from the east
right.
coast.
I'm getting more confused.
Welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Hey, it's Chris in Memphis.
Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys?
All right, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right. Does anyone know where Winfrey is at?
Is that him?
No. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
It's Carola in Medicine Hat, Alberta.
Hi, Carola. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Hi.
All right. Thank you for being here. We had somebody else joining after you. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location. Is it Fred? I don't think so. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
That works.
But only if you want to, we welcome you. Thank you for being here.
This is Marilyn in Flagstaff.
Marilyn, welcome to the call. Caller, please say your name and location.
Susan in Delaware.
Hi, Susan. Welcome to the call.
This is Steve in West Palm Beach.
Hello, Steve. Welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
All right. Doing well, thank you. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Jeannie in Citrus Heights.
Good evening, Jeannie. Welcome to the call.
Thank you, hi.
All right. Thank you for being here.
Good to be here.
Great. All right.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to the call. Good evening. Welcome to the call. This is Terry back. Hi, Terry.
Hi, yeah, when's calling in?
All right. Did she drop out?
I just went out to call in.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome to the call.
Hello.
Hello, Wynn.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
Thank you for being here, Wynn.
I'm so glad Hayes is here. Because, have you been entertaining everybody, guys?
Have I been what? Entertaining? No, I've been kind of, not so nice to the people.
I see. You're just being, you're just doing a good host job.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I do my
comfort.
How many of you prepared yourself for an open mic tonight?
None.
How many of you have something that you're chomping at the bit to share?
I got a question. I got a question for Heiss.
I've done every talk at once. Did you send an email about
I was going to ask Heiss about the electronic nature of the stone engine things. If there's any correlation between like condensers, electrical components, and some of those monolithic stone structures.
I'm not about familiar with the stone and the electricity, stone engines.
Earth energy. Not necessarily electricity. I was just reading a book called Legacy of the Gods by Freddie Silva. And he's talking about some of those structures function as, energy mechanisms to condense energy and move it around and stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Michael Tellinger, too. It's amazing with all that information.
Yeah, yep, you're right.
Yeah, Michael Challenger is really me. Okay. In any case, is Terry here?
There are three Terrys over here.
Do we have Terry Friedman?
Yes.
Do we have Terry Brown?
Yes.
And who's the third Terry?
Terry LaBarba.
Terry. Hi, Terry LaBarba.
Hello.
Are you in Santa Barbara?
No, unfortunately. I'm in Dallas.
In Dallas. It must be your name. LaBarber.
Sorry.
All right, hang on. Let me mute everybody. And of course, we have the great silent one already.
All callers are muted.
Okay, here we go.
This conference is being recorded.
This is November 3rd, 2014. Wynn and Terry in Sedona. Heiss and Regalia. And all of you, wherever you are. And those of you who are listening on the internet, we are going to have an open mic tonight. If you didn't read PBS, I'm looking at PBS's URL to see there's my picture. Oh my God. Let's see here. What is their phone number?
I have it here in front of me, Wynn. For station 2 is. Yeah. For station 2, which we are on, is 888-627-6008.
Okay, that is station 1.
That's station 2.
Well, I am on their website right now, and as I scroll down, it says call in live 888-429-5471. Okay?
Okay, then I have an incorrect note over here. Thank you for correcting me.
Maybe it's wrong, because VBS is wrong sometimes, you know?
No, I have both numbers here, so either number will work, I think.
Okay. Yeah, as long as somebody else is not getting a lot of call-ins, I'm sure they can plug in either number to either thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, now... we're having a open mic, okay, and we are, why am I having an open mic? Because I know that I am a good talker, and I see things deeply, and sometimes I say things that are interesting and that trigger things. We know that Terry is amazing, and we bring in these great energies and wisdoms from higher realms. I mean, it's absolutely miraculous that we do this. And we have Terry Friedman here, who remembers his past life being with Jesus. And we have Carla Ruckert every Sunday. I'm surrounded with some of the most, some of the most incredible people on our planet. And we have not had a new influx of people for quite some time. And you guys, there's a blessing for that in the sense that we have a group energy here of people that are getting a lot of, how can I say it, focus on this group energy that we've created. And when we get an influx of new people, it all falls apart and then rebuilds in a different way. So we have even, I know that many of you who are listening, and many of you who are listening on the internet, feel a kinship, a friendship, like we become a friend, even when we don't know who you are. And I learn from observing. One of the things I've observed is that when people listen to these calls for a period of time, they get the inner knowingness that there's truth here. Not just truth in the sense of the verbal things. It's a bigger truth than that. It's how can I say it? It's like at the highest level, it's like meeting your soul family. That many of us are here from higher dimensions. We've chosen to come in to be of service. We've been tossed around in this realm. I certainly have. I think Terry has. We've been tossed around in other lives. And then suddenly, there's something that just resonates so deeply. And there's a knowingness that you cannot, how would I say it? You can't exactly explain it. There's many things we can point to. That and we, many of you have been tracking us know we have the St. Catherine Terry combination. We have the Terry Friedman Matthew combination. We have so many things, and every one of them is amazing enough. You could almost spend the rest of your life focusing on that particular thing. We have the David Wilcock, Edgar Cayce correlation. We don't know who Heis Magalia was. You know, it's not important that you're somebody in a past life. It really isn't, no matter who it was, because the past is the past, and it's like, you could have been something very, very distinguished, and here you are again, and you're a total screw-up. Yet that and I shouldn't say a total screw-up, because you're not screwing it up. It's better to say that you're here, and your high self, this is the way I understand that it works, your high self chose another experience for you. Because oftentimes when you have a distinguished life, when you have a life where you have a lot of power, oftentimes we actually go on ego trips. We think we're superior to other people. And it's like, unless you had that lifetime and you were totally indifferent to the worldly aspect of it. And you said, how am I going to be of service now that I'm this way? Unless that happened to you, which it doesn't usually happen. If it did, you wouldn't need another experience. But if you had an experience where you were exalted, distinguished, empowered, wealthy, and you identified with that, and you said, man, I really got it together. And of course, as you look into the world, we see so many people that are in those experiences doing exactly what I'm saying, thinking they're superior, thinking they're better. It's not often that you find someone that's just transparent and say, well, since I'm famous, how do I serve the planet? You know, occasionally you do, but not often. So then you have to come back. You know, I think the way it works, I'm just projecting here. I think the way it works is your high self wants you to come back and be a nobody and be humble so that you can integrate that other lifetime when you were exalted. And oftentimes, the way it screws up when that's the case for somebody, and I've watched this, I know this is true, that somebody that has an exalted lifetime and comes back and has a more ordinary circumstance or has all kinds of obstacles, usually there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of difficulty in just, why isn't everybody honoring me? There's a word called entitlement, where people think they deserve something from other people. Now, when you're at the top of the heap, when you're famous, when you're rich, you get all the things you think you deserve, but you know what? They're not giving it to you because of you. They're giving it to you, in most cases, because of your position. They're not giving it to you because they love you. And so you think there's, the mind just says, it must be me. And so, therefore, you're living an illusion, and you have to come back. And then you go through entitlement. Entitlement is like the expectation that people are supposed to be a certain way, and they're supposed to defer to you, and they're not doing it. And they're not doing it because you don't have the same worldly image. And then you start thinking, how do I get that worldly image again? And you start trying to recreate that. You still haven't learned the lesson, because if you happen to do something that gets you the worldly image, you go right back into, now I'm somebody, now I'm something, because I have the worldly image. Everybody's responding to me now. Everybody's loving me. And so this is like an example of duality, where you have to keep repeating this cycle until it smooths out, until it levels out, and then you can be successful, people can respond to you, but you never take it seriously. You use it as just another tool to be of service to this realm, but you don't get into an ego trip. Now, you know, I know that that's true for me. I know that I've had that cycle. I know that when I was younger, when are people going to discover me? And, I mean, I know there's this stuff inside me. And, you know, something I don't always talk about, and I may have said it before, but, you know, I had a reading when I first started studying Wilcock. And Wilcock was doing readings. And in the reading, there were a couple of things that addressed me that really shook my core. Like, I knew the Ra group could see me with X-ray eyes at the most deepest levels imaginable. And keep in mind that I would say when I started writing the Wilcock book, see, I'm telling everybody who's supposed to talk, and now I'm talking. No one's too excited about talking, but I'm just going to do this for a little bit, and then I'm going to open up the mics. But I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to set the foundation for being willing to be transparent. And every time you talk in front of people, there's this thing like, oh my God, now I'm talking, everyone's listening to me. And you can go into the old pattern easily, particularly if you had exalted lifetimes. Say, there he is, I'm on the way up, people are listening to me. Well, in the Wilcock, let me just say, if I was going to describe my distortions when I first started writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And of course, distortion is the word the Ra group uses to talk about where you are deviating from the One. And they're not necessarily bad. In fact, you can clear one level of distortions, and then a whole new level comes in, and then a whole new level comes in. And I don't think you can have a physical embodiment without having distortions. It goes with having a physical embodiment. So if you're trying to be perfect, forget it. It ain't going to happen. But you can clear certain level of distortions. And when you do, you're able to be a teacher or a role model or an example for other people that are going through that distortion and want to get above it. And so that's one good reason to clear a level of distortion. And then when you get a little more clear, you can just be who you are, authentic. It doesn't matter where you are. And there's still levels of distortion. But of course, if you could see your levels of distortion, if you could really see them, that would mean they're on the way out. So, you know, one of the things that I think is happening to people on our calls and the repetitiveness of it is that they start to observe their levels of distortion because they start seeing themselves from a higher perspective. And then when you do that, you see the levels of distortion. As soon as you observe the distortion, the part of you that is observing is above the distortion. And as you keep doing it, the distortion gets fainter. It doesn't disappear. I don't think distortions ever disappear, but they become it would be as if you're walking around in a city, you could have loads of garbage on the street. And you go up on an airplane and look down on the street, and it looks beautiful. You see the architecture, you don't see the garbage. The garbage is still there. Your vantage point has changed. And so in the Wilcock reading, I think that there were two distortions that they surfaced. They didn't call it distortions. I'm using that terminology. But I had this image of myself as an entertainer and a songwriter, and that I had the experience of going on stage and really making audiences respond to me. And I was very authentic when I was on stage, except I didn't have a clue how to be authentic off stage. So when I stopped doing music, I still created myself to be on stage selling things at festivals. That's being on stage in a different way. And what they said to me, you know, the intelligence for Edgar Cayce is they said, when you leave the stage, you're not finished.
You have to clean up the stage. You have to do everything that's required to be on stage. Like you need a man, and they didn't say this, but you know, if you were doing music, you need a manager, you need a support group, you need a team. You can't just walk on stage and say, man, I'm great, and then everything changes, because there's no anchoring, there's no grounding until you can hold the energy off stage as well as on stage. That is one thing they said. I should have read it exactly, because it was kind of poetic the way they said it. Then the other thing they said, now, keep in mind, I was at a very frustrated and discouraged place in my life. I had been stuck for years going around selling things. At swap meets and street fairs. And I kept thinking, how do I get out of this? It was like a cycle that I couldn't get out of. I said, one day I said, I'd rather die if I have to keep doing this. And that's when I started writing poems, and that's when I started writing for the Spirit of Mott, and that's when I interviewed David Wilcock, and I ended up writing the book. And then when I had, when I was writing the book, from my perspective, I had no idea the book would ever get published. I didn't know I could write a good book. And I just said, this is going to be really important to do this. And it's going to be really even more important than playing music and being recognized as a songwriter. And so, and then David was fairly much of a nightmare. David, if you listen to this, I love you, but you were a nightmare, and you know you were a nightmare. He even said it. He said he was trying to sabotage the book because he was scared of being recognized as Edgar Cayce. And then once the book came out, he did not want to talk about Edgar Cayce. In fact, he made a comment on a recent blog post of his that most of, you know, when the book came out, he was cursing me for writing the book. And then he said, I now see that Winfrey did kind of a good thing in getting that through, because I'm sure David is getting the recognition he's getting now, partially because of the book. And maybe it would have happened anyway, but the book certainly sped up the process and made people curious, and they wanted to check him out. So here I was, writing a book that I didn't know if I'd get published, having lived a vagabond career that I didn't want to do, and I'm starting to write this book, and I get a reading because I want to check David out, and what did they tell me? This is, like, amazing. They said, you have unplayed coins in the jukebox of your soul. I said, well, what did that mean, huh? Unplayed coins in the jukebox of your soul. And then they said, I'm trying to remember, they said, we're going to help you have magnifying glass so you can see your patterns so you don't have to keep repeating them. And they said I was repeating patterns over and over again for many lifetimes. And I went back to the troubadour lifetime. And I didn't understand how that would work. I still don't understand it. But I do know that if I had unplayed coins in the jukebox of my soul, probably playing some of them right now, And in the way that I'm doing this work, I am not, how would I say, I don't have any pattern. Some people may think otherwise, but I really don't have a pattern of, how can I say it, thinking I'm anybody special, because from an ego level, because people are listening to me,
and I say things that are sometimes wise. I'm not even knowing I say them. When I finish a call, I don't even remember what I said. It's like I'm not channeling, or maybe I am. I don't know. Maybe it's partially channeling. But nonetheless, I have the same experience of Terry. Duh, what did he say? Some of you know what I'm talking about. You're in the call, you're following it, you're tracking it in the moment when it's over. What did he say? You know, you can't remember. So, because it's not like I'm saying things that you can follow. But sometimes I say things that you say, hey, that's my pattern. And I recognize that. And then it's like, how did he know my pattern? And I knew it because it's my pattern as well. This is what happens to an old soul in this realm. You've been there and done that, and then you meet people, and it's not often that you meet somebody that's not fitting in to some pattern that you've already gone through. And so on that note, I want to open up the mics. And instead of just listening to me, I want to give you guys a chance to talk, to ask questions. We're not going to channel. You know, in particular, I would like to hear how coming to these calls over and over again has impacted you, if you can verbalize it. And we'll start out with Terry, since I know she'll say yes. Terry, are you there? Uh-oh.
Yes, I'm
are
here.
You on...
Yes.
There you go. You want...
Well, I'm always affected, like after I finish the call, I feel generally uplifted, and I feel a lot of, well, it lifts me out of all of my patterns and all of my stuff I've got going on. And so I always feel a lot better, or almost always feel a lot better after the call. And then it holds for, it holds. In general, my general level rises up. And I start seeing patterns that I've had that are gradually dissipating.
Mm-hmm. I have that same experience. You know, I'll come into a call, and I'll have all this resistance, and sometimes I'm angry or have things going, and I jump in, and before you know it, by the end of the call, I'm transformed. I feel different. It's an amazing thing to observe, you know? See, I'm not doing it. I'm part of the flow just as much as everyone else. Well, thank you for sharing, Terry. And let's see. I could just call on people. I'm looking
at I am, and Ariel is also on the call.
Ariel, she is. Did she just come on?
No, she was here earlier. She was going to lose her battery, I guess, but she's still here.
She was going to lose her battery. Oh, yeah. I think Ariel is a, what do you call it? She's been taking lessons from Terry on electronics and phones. I know Ariel is bold. She'll be able to say something. Clark, I know you've been coming on the calls for a long time, but, you know, I don't want to embarrass anybody, okay? Anybody that's on BBS, if they want to call in, just tell them to wait until we finish the person we're on, and we'll put you on. But let's see. Ariel, can we unmute Ariel?
She's unmuted.
Ariel, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for fixing my phone, Elohim.
Ariel, I think you should start a business. And you should make little pieces of fabric that say Elohim fix ya for people to put under their shoes.
You know, I wear it on my feet with the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if other people are going to want to use magic markers to paint their feet, but you know, Ariel, most of you probably know, and if you haven't listened to the Ariel Sacagawea 2-hour session we did, I'm going to run it again this week, and I hope you'll listen. It's like a $3 to $8 donation, and I think I can say, I shouldn't say, because if I say it, she's not going to say it. Ariel, how has your life changed as a result of coming into our calls?
My life recentered itself. When I got my tooth out, I felt so blessed. I wished I could have told everyone, and my son felt so blessed that his mom was so loved that I got my tooth out, because the infection, like my son Wesley said, and please pray for him out on those oil rigs, those boys out there, it's cold. Anyway, he said, Mom, you were dying from the inside out. I'm so glad that somebody thought something of you, because I love you. He just didn't have any money. That's why I'm grateful to God and to Elohim and to Terry and Wynn. I love these guys. And don't forget Chef.
Don't forget who?
I love all of you. I love you, Morgan. I love you, Michael, out there in California. I had the opportunity to help a man that's blind, and now I'm trying to help him to find his way as he's a wanderer.
You know, when you start helping people, it actually is catchy. You start to get how it works, because you start to feel good inside yourself. You start to feel worthier when you really do something that really changes someone else. Because even I don't want to, you know, say, I don't want to get involved, you know. But I have to look beyond that and see, I try to see, if I help somebody in some way, will it make a permanent shift? Or will it be a direction in a permanent shift? Are they just always going to come back and say, Wynn, help me, help me, help me, help me? Then it's not worth starting, because it becomes codependent. But in any case, you know, Ariel,
I wanted to say to the group, I made an effort and made some beautiful knives that I sent to Wynn, and he's going to put them with you. And I wanted to let you guys know that I really love you, and I made arrowheads. And I'm chipping right now because my tooth is better. I need one more out, but I'm feeling better. And I love you, Terry Brown.
Yeah. So, yeah, she sent me these. Ariel, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Now, you didn't make the knives, did you?
No, I didn't make the knives. I recycle knives. I don't have any obsidian, or I would have made obsidian knives. But I made whale knives. They're for filleting fish in remembrance of my son.
Mm-hmm.
My son works on the oil field.
What Ariel did is she made, really, what she made was two cases for the knives out of leather. And one of them has beadwork on it, and one of them has, what do you call it, little, like flappy, leather flappy things. And
they're braided. They're braided. They're laced. And they have buckles. They have one has a buckle for a man and one for a woman.
How did you learn how to do that this lifetime?
I lived with the Cheyenne for 8 years. And each year they would teach me something. Because I had to live on my backpack and I had to give everything away. But as I said, the Cheyenne were not the teacher. The Shoshone were the teachers, because Haman Wise was my father, and he was a chief, and he had to do with Chief Washakie, and that's what Pat Vegas has to do with this Chief Washakie. It's all Shoshone, And don't forget Benny LeBeau in your prayers tonight because he's a land worker like I am. We anchor in light.
Okay. And when you started doing it, you did bead work, you did leather work, you chipped. Chipped is the word that Native Americans use for sculpting things out of obsidian or glass. Do other people do it out of glass as well?
Well, here's the deal. I am from Chicoa Nation, which is in the Mississippi Delta. But I learned Aztecan when I was in college and the Mayans, and plus I've done a lot of land work, and so when I was crossing over, one of the gifts they gave me as I crossed over elders, I used three guides, three guardians, and three angels, but the Christ consciousness of Christ, because Christ comes himself, and he helps the people to go over. We have a lot of people on the road that are dead and don't know they're dead, and so they're not to haunt, they're to ascend. You see, the great transition is happening right now. Terry Brown and I have spoken of this and how a lot of these Native Americans are very angry. That is not of love and light. And so they've been asked to go home and finish their biscuits to the husband that's in heaven. Or go and finish tribes, lots and lots of tribes. I use a power of divine intervention through my sun dance, because one of the things we do when we sweat is we ascend over the old ones, and they can't cling to us then because they're released and put into the light. Fool's Crow was one of the greatest ones we've ever had. Fool's Crow, Black Elf.
Right, wait a second. You're giving too much detail. Too much detail.
Okay, well, anyway, the Mayans, they did eccentrics. They didn't do just arrowheads. They did effigies.
Okay. Some other day, we'll do another Ariel talk, and we can go into some of the details. But right now, I just wanted you to share. I know that when I met Ariel about 5 years ago, she couldn't focus. And she was so scattered. And it's like, did I really want to talk to her?
He didn't. I'll tell you the truth, he didn't. He actually told me to leave. And Oren talked to him. But I want to say, it's the love of this group. See, when you're around people that are mean and angry, you don't want to respond that way. But when you're around people that love you for peace, love, harmony, and grace, and I made a beautiful piece of glass in remembrance of the group that pray my peace and the love of Terry and Lynn. And I know the Holy Spirit is very strong in me. And I know that I'm going to do great things in the latter part of my life, because it was preordained by, I was a Mormon, an Elohim. And I knew that in the latter part of my life, I would cocoon out and I would do good things. And it's because of the love of Wynn and Terry and Chef Jim that loved me until I could love myself. So that's what I'm trying to do with this family here. But I'm soon
okay,
to leave.
Let me just do a commercial. You know, Ariel sent me these knives. I'm going to take some pictures of them, put them out to the group, so that I will tell you they have great energy. When I hold the knife in my hand, I can feel so much vibration. So Ariel has the ability to bring in high stuff. When we put them out, some of you, she'll make more if there's a demand, I'm sure. And okay, thank you, Ariel. Let me go on to the next person.
Let me just say thank you, because I so appreciated you listening to my songs and also to the cries of my children. Thank you so much for praying for the story children.
Okay. All right. And thank you for sharing. Okay.
Thanks, Wendy. Love is the key, man.
If I unmute everybody, let me see here. Are you watching the panel, Hives?
Yes, I am.
Let's see. Hang on just a second here.
Am I to open it up?
Yeah, let's open it up and just pay attention if there's too much background noise.
All callers are unmuted.
There we go. Hey, William. You guys are pretty quiet. Who has something to share?
Hi, Will. It's Dharmananda here.
Dharmananda. Okay. Hang on. Let me mute everybody.
Yeah.
I got it, Will.
Yeah, okay.
All callers are muted.
I'm breaking up.
Are you there, Dharmananda?
Hey, Dharmananda.
I'm here.
We got you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on. Okay. Yeah, we hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I just found out about prolozone. You ever heard of that?
Prolozone? You're talking about
prolozone. It's a new treatment for arthritis. That's an ozone and oxygen injection that's in your joints.
Well,
you heard about that?
Do you know that I have been really involved in ozone for the past couple of months?
Yeah.
You know about Dr.
Rowan?
Dr. who?
Hello? Rowan. Dr.
I hear you.
Yeah, Rowan. R-O-W-E-N.
Dr. Rowan is now in Sierra Leone, and he was interviewed a few times by Dr. Mercola, and he is an expert on ozone therapy, and I've been aware of ozone therapy for years, okay, and one time. Years ago, somebody gave me an ozone shot, and I thought it was awesome. I could feel it. But at the time, it just, you know, I was feeling fairly healthy, and I did not, the only way to do ozone was to go to a doctor and get it or to buy a machine, which were really expensive at the time. And so... So I just put it on the table. But a couple of months ago, like I am pretty sure ozone is one of the most powerful healing agents on the planet. And it's got a lot of credibility. It's like being used in Russia and in Germany as an approved thing for doctors to use, and it seems like they're having tremendous success with across the board almost everything. One day I'll do a whole talk on ozone, but you know, from AIDS to cancer to arthritis, and a couple of months ago, I said I want to figure out how to have access to ozone because there's all this idea. Conjecture of Ebola and whatever else, and I wanted to know how to heal myself and other people if it ever came down to that, and I hope it doesn't, but just in case. So I learned how to build an ozone machine, and then I built one, and I've been fooling with it and testing it, and Terry's been testing it, and Ariel was using it. And it helped her brain get more centered. And I'm amazed. I would say I've never experienced anything personally that has such an impact on my body immediately. I mean, immediately. Like, usually when you're doing things that are healthy, they say do it, and hopefully in 2 months you'll notice something. This thing switches things around immediately. I mean, I don't know if it's going to make cancer go away immediately, but it increases my sense of well-being. It got rid of aches and pains. Jerry was getting sick, and she used it, and immediately she felt better right afterwards. It goes right into your cells and starts doing stuff. You guys should read about it. Ozone therapy. But go ahead, Dharmananda. You, you were talking about Dr. Rowan.
Yeah, anyway, they have a clinic really close to me. There's a clinic for me that does that therapy. They put people right in your joints, and it cures the arthritis right away. You know, but you have to get you can't just drink the ozone. And it's pretty expensive. It costs about $500 or $600 to get all the injection I need. And I don't know how I'm going to afford that, but when I can, I want to get my injections as soon as possible.
Are you talking about getting a treatment from a doctor?
Naturopaths will do that.
Yeah. I mean, if people that can afford it, look up ozone therapy and then look up ozone practitioners, and you will find them. But I'll tell you what I've been doing. The machine that I made, what I learned in studying this, is that you can take the ozone and put it into a funnel, like a kitchen funnel, and then you push the funnel against your skin, and it goes into the skin and into the bloodstream and the organs near where you put it. And when I was using it, which I've been doing now, I could feel a whole lightening up. It's like more space. It's bringing oxygen everywhere there's a shift. So I don't know how well that will work for like AIDS or cancer, but it might, or arthritis. I don't have any experience of it. But I know it was working in ways that I could feel it, which was unusual. And you can just move it around any point on your body. It's like giving yourself an ozone massage. But there are practitioners. If you look up ozone therapy practitioners,
yeah, I have ozone.
Them. You look up. Say that again, Dormananda.
Yeah, already. I found one that's pretty close to my. Yeah, I found one that's pretty close.
Yeah.
Charge about $600.
They're all over the country. I mean, the official way for a practitioner to do it is to take blood out of your body, put ozone through it, which kills everything, and then put the blood back in. But you know what? Let me open the mic for someone else, okay? And thanks for sharing. Hang on.
All callers are unmuted.
Anyone else?
When I was reading today that ozone therapy cures Ebola.
Yeah, well, people, I don't know if they have a case of Ebola that was cured by ozone therapy. So I wouldn't say that until they start having a case. But they do have
This report was coming from Africa that I read.
Oh, was it? Then
actually, the American government owns the patent on Ebola.
They own 70 patents. You're wrong. They own 70 patents.
You're correct. You're right. But
it's not one
in 70. States. It's a false flag.
I know.
Well, you know what?
Colloidal silver cures it as well.
Yeah, I've read that, too. I've read that, you know.
Colloidal silver may or may not work. Nano silver, the silver solution by Rima Lebeau.
Yeah, her husband's also connected to the cabal, so, that was a good way for her to make some money.
By the way, I just got an article today comparing for those of you that don't know, colloidal silver is a fairly inexpensive substance. In fact, it's something you can make yourself with a battery and silver wires, essentially. But many people give it credit for being an across-the-board healing thing that kills viruses and kills everything. And then somebody came out with something called nano-silver, which was supposedly an upgraded version of colloidal silver. And somebody just sent me an article that said the nano silver stuff was a hype, okay?
Well, be, yeah, because it came from a doctor.
Well, it was actually used in a study by the U.S. military.
Right, but they said Floydal also worked.
I wouldn't necessarily trust the studies that came from there.
You could also do Mega-C. You would have to take a lot of vitamin C, but that would cure Ebola as well.
Yeah, Gary Null says you need 1 to 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Yes.
But I'll tell you, it's a good idea to start building your immune system now. Because if you have a strong immune system, then, and if you're living a balanced life, your chances of getting these serious things are greatly diminished. You know, this Saturday I'm going to do a workshop with Kathleen Rosenblatt. It's going to be a three-hour workshop. She was on our call last week, and we're going to talk about building your immune system. And people that have specific problems are going to get a chance to ask her, what is good for my problem? And she has huge experience across the board. And I should say, so does Terry Friedman. Some other time, we'll do it with Terry. They both have different perspectives. Terry, are you there?
Yes.
Anything you'd like to share with us?
Well, no, but I say, like Ebola, I believe I've developed a formula of essential oils that will cure it as well. I do think that usually with most diseases, there are several pathways to heal it. Not just one single pathway. There are a number of pathways, just like many roads lead to Rome, as we say. There are a lot of different therapies, modalities that will heal Ebola. So, yes, I would say that's very true. And I'm not at all surprised that 003 would also cure it. Because it does not do well with
oxygen. What do you perform it? Or mana?
When we need to leave PBS.
We need to get off. We're running out of time. Terry, I just want to say, Terry Friedman, if you can come to our Saturday call, you know, this is centered on Kathleen Rosenblatt. But I'll get a chance to introduce the two of you. And she is an amazing, you know, I told you, she's the woman that brought acupuncture to this country, opened the first acupuncture clinic, opened 5 acupuncture schools, studied Oriental medicine. And she's very open to learning as well. She has a wealth of information about various things, but she's also always likes to hear new things. And I'll bet you and her would have a really, really good rapport. So if you can remember, I will remind you, and I'll make a point to introduce you on Saturday, okay?
Okay, yeah.